You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
And Treasure Coast, this is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard every Monday from 1 p.m. until 2 p.m. on WWBC AM 1510, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and all over the world.
On the internet on 1510, WWBC.com, and of course on the app as well, WWBC. Search for it either in the Google Play Store or in the Apple App Store.
That's right. You just have to download the app and hit Listen Live.
That's right.
Simple as can be. And so, Paul, you know, we're here every Monday. Ellen is here and Samantha and myself. And we talk about topics here, right here in Brevard County, Florida and around the world. And sometimes we invite people to come on our show and just call in and speak about a book or running for office or financial literacy. Some people call in to talk about the environment, whatever it is. Our show is fun, it's unscripted, it's very informative and quite educational. I have to say, I get an education myself as it is from the show. But today, of course, Ellen couldn't make it and Samantha couldn't make it and invited a friend who's quite interested in having a show of her own on the station. And I think this is the start of something new. So my friend Kim Meredith is here.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're going to be co-hosting with me today.
Absolutely. It's always fun to be here.
You're a gem. And you know, one thing about you, you always have a smile. You always have a smile, no matter what. You're always smiling. And that's the way it should be, right?
I love
life. We say every day you wake up is a good day.
It is.
Right?
Absolutely.
Breathing nowadays with COVID, you never know, right? So we have two guests calling in today, Kim. The first one is going to be a girl called Heather Davis. And she's a grad student. In the world, I have to say, of social work. And she's calling in from Maryland to speak about siblings raising siblings. She's got quite a story about taking on the responsibility for her younger brother and sister at age 15. They were 15 and 16 when she started taking care of them, and she was 21. And a second guest, a woman by the name of Alina Martin, she's calling in to speak about her journey. She wrote a book, and it's just one of those books that make you think about yourself. It makes you think about forgiveness. It makes you think about your self-worth. And I was talking to her, and I said, you know, your story resonates with so many people because a lot of people are looking for ways to find their way home. People are getting divorced. People are getting separated. People, you know, all over the world, they have issues with their family members and their siblings. And so she wrote a book, and she's going to be calling in to speak about that book. Yeah.
So
that's our second segment. So as it is right now, we have our first caller is on the phone. But before we go to Heather, I think it's Heather Dennis, you know, we're all watching this tragedy of COVID play out. And you have your card. You're card-carrying COVID.
I am a card carrier.
I like that. Yeah, we're watching the tragedy play out all over the United States and ICUs. All over the nation, the virus is really obstructing people's ability to return to work. And you can't blame government for this.
Correct.
You can't. I heard this morning somebody was saying, well, the Biden administration numbers are down and because and COVID is the number one issue or the war or whatever. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. He doesn't have the ownership of your arm. Your arm is what they need to take the vaccine and put a shot in it. Like in England, they call it a jab. You need two jabs.
Simple choice for us.
Right. So you can't blame the city council. You can't blame the state representative. You can't blame the school board member. You can't blame anybody but yourself if you choose not to get the vaccine. And if you have a personal choice why you don't want to get the vaccine and it's a medical reason or whatever, that's up to you. That's a choice, right? But the thing is, for people to say they're going to blame the government for that, no, I don't think so. Because the truth of the matter is, the virus will continue to mutate until we have a certain level of immunity. And what happens if the virus continues to mutate? Even though you might be getting more money on your job and it might increase your wages, you still need childcare. So somebody has to take care of your children. And if that person is not vaccinated in the daycare where your children are, the children are going to bring the vaccine home. Someone has to take care of your elderly parents. And if the elderly parents don't have someone working for them who's vaccinated and have a decent wage, you're going to bring that home to your elder, to your children.
Correct.
So it all depends on the level of immunity in the communities. So we can't blame, and the government is doing their best.
And we have a personal responsibility to every person helping.
Right.
We have to do our right thing.
And a good friend of mine this morning told me he couldn't go to his favorite restaurant because of Labor Day. And I understand that because it's Labor Day. People want to take a day off and go to the beach. But here's the thing. If we want to return to shopping, we want to return to the theaters, we want to return to ball games, we want to return to eating with our families for restaurants, like you know about that.
Oh, yeah.
We've got to be vaccinated.
Yes, we do.
Because the unvaccinated and the vaccinated, both we are all Americans. And in order to reset the economy, we have to take care of this pandemic. There's no two ways about it.
Exactly.
Right? You saw my article in the paper.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, I think we have our guest, Ms. Heather Davis, is on the phone. And we're going to go right to her now because she knows a little bit about raising her siblings. And I want to know what she's doing to her about this COVID herself with all the stuff she's doing with school and everything. So Heather, thank you for calling in.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, how are you doing? And you're calling in from Maryland, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. So tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what's going on with you and your siblings, and just the name of your Facebook page, Siblings Raising Siblings. It makes all of us feel motivated, and we appreciate people like you. People like you, people like grandmothers who are raising kids, right? Yeah, people who adopt children. It's just amazing. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what made you decide that this is the one topic that you were going to focus on.
Okay, so my family is unique, as many others are. And in my particular case, I took on my siblings when I was 21 years old. And I took care of them for the remaining years of school. My sister was in the 8th grade at the time. My brother was in the 9th. So there was about 5 years left of raising them through their high school years. And that presented quite a challenge. I thought that I was going to have much more assistance than I did with the world of social work and different programs that are out there to help families in need. And I actually had a lot more backlash than what I was anticipating. And led me down the path of wanting to actually take on the world of social work myself and maybe make some change for other families that are in the same circumstances.
Right. And how old were you when you took on the responsibility of your siblings?
I was 21.
And how old are your siblings now?
Now they are 29 and 30.
Yeah. And so, what do you think, what happened that made you the person that had to take care of the siblings? Was this something happened with the family?
Well, long story short, my mother was never really much on the motherly side of things. And when she remarried someone awful and who did horrible things to my younger siblings. And I fought for many years to get them out of that situation, and the time finally came when I was 21 that I was able to do so.
Wow.
So remove them from the home.
You are a beautiful human being. Thank you for doing that, because, you know, a lot of people look the other way, not because they want to, but because maybe they don't have the resources. Maybe they themselves were abused or something happened with them, and they want to move away from the family. But you decided you were going to take that step to just take your sister and brother in. and shelter them and take care of them and coax them along the way. To you have a goal in life, I suppose. You want them to succeed, and so I thank you for that.
Heather, also,
oh, thank you.
How did it affect you financially that you were able to step into the shoes that parents usually take on financially, taking care of siblings?
That was one of the largest challenges I had. That's where I was expecting a little bit more help from social workers. I did get the kids on the state insurance, which I did not have to pay for. We did have food stamps for a short time. There was other benefits, things for like utility assistance and things like that, that I was qualified for at different phases throughout the time. They were very stringent on what you could make. So moving up and growing up in my career along the way was not easy, because every time I advanced, I was actually somewhat kind of punished in the world of social work. And I make it even more challenging to take care of my siblings and my daughter, who was a toddler at the time.
Well,
so financially,
you.
It was definitely a struggle.
Yeah. So the thing is, there had to have been strengths and weaknesses during this journey, and I know you're also doing research about it as well. You're speaking with other people too. So, what are some of the common strengths and weaknesses you hear from people like yourself who's trying to assist their siblings, and in other words, raise their siblings?
Yes. Very similar circumstances to my stories from what I've when I've spoken with others. Same thing, challenges with finance and resources. A lot of times, schools, doctor's offices, if you don't have legal guardianship, I did, but some other families was not able to get that, and they really struggled there. So that's a common struggle. But as far as strengths go, you notice a lot of resilience in the older siblings. A lot of times they are going through, or they already went through what their current younger siblings are going through, and they don't want their siblings to repeat what they lived through. So they step up. And oftentimes, usually can take on the full parental caseload, or in other times, you know, they are kind of just step in and out as needed. But I'm mostly focusing on siblings that are actually taking the full parental role, not just like, there's a lot of people that are helping their parents that are in a rough spot, and that's great and all, but I want to spend my focus on the siblings that are actually taking on the full parental role, financially, physically, mentally, emotionally.
Yes.
So.
And Heather, my best friend took on her younger sibling at the age of 13, and literally had to sweep parking lots to figure out how to feed a nine-year-old. And so I know firsthand, you know, I've lived through her eyes, and, you know, I just commend you, because I know that you miss out on a lot of things in your life also, taking care of kids when you're a kid.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, you know, this is very common with immigrants. Like, I came from Trinidad. One of my best friends is from Nigeria. And when she came to the United States, I think she was about 14 or 15. And her father was remarried to someone in the United States. And her brother and sister were here with her from Nigeria. And they were, I think the boy was about 12 and the girl was about 11. When my friend turned 16, she started renting a room from a woman who happens to be Trinidadian. That was our connection, why we became best friends. And she started working as a nursing assistant at the age of 16, to pay for that room to take care of herself and her two siblings, because her stepmother and her father had their own life with new children. And so it reminded me of us back home in the Caribbean when our parents had multiple children. The older girls in the families became instant moms.
Yes.
Feeding the children, clothing them, bathing them, making sure they did their homework. And, you know, with limited resources, we did the best we could. So when Heather... Dennis, you know, talked to me about her situation, it reminded me that it is it's a global problem that siblings are raising siblings. But some of us do it because we want you, we love them, and some of them do it because it's just out of hardship.
And even with COVID now, the mothers are working more hours, And the kids are left home to take care of each other.
Right.
So I see it even during this pandemic.
Right.
Really affecting more people.
Yeah, it's an issue about education as well. And so Heather, when you speak with other people during when you were doing your interview with other social workers and their experiences witnessing this kind of stuff with other families, what were some of the things they told you that happened? Why siblings ended up raising siblings?
I've got a few different scenarios that were shared with me when I was interviewing social workers. One of the ones that stood out to me was this woman was 21 years old. She had 7 younger siblings, and secretly their mother was dying from AIDS. And when she passed, this was back in the 80s, mind you, when AIDS didn't really know much about them, but this was a particular case that sat with her and why she was so interested in meeting with me. And this poor girl, she was ultimately not able to take care of all 7 children naturally at 21 years old. And this is before Family Preservation Act passed in the 90s, and they literally took every child out of that house right in front of her. And she remembers that the 21-year-old sister was the only adult. And she just sat there, unable to do anything, just crying. I mean, so there's been a lot of things that have come a long way over time. But yet, there's still a lot that can be done for this particular family group. Because, again, like you mentioned, grandparents, and there's a lot of resources out there. But when it's a sibling, people, even social workers, judges, they automatically want to know who else is available. So that was the most what I've seen with social workers is they're mostly were taking away the kids from the older siblings. There was another one that shared a story with me, but the child sibling was 17 years old, just a few months from aging out, and they didn't want to have this child placed. And they did everything. They gave this sister an apartment, a vehicle. They gave him a bike. They gave him a bed. I mean, they gave everything. But not everybody has had that experience. So I've heard several different ranges of experiences with social workers.
Yeah.
Heather, my heart just breaks, I'm telling you. Would you have a website or something that we could get some contact info and give it to our listeners and get some more info into people's hands?
I do not have a website at this time. That is something I'm working on having in the future when I can become more organized. Right now I'm still a grad student. At this time, I'm just using my Facebook page, the Siblings Raising Siblings, and then I have a private group called Siblings Raising Siblings Community, which we have about 57 members so far.
Great.
that I grant approval to in this group specifically if you either are currently or in the past have raised your siblings or were raised by your siblings.
Oh, that's wonderful. So your story is very compelling and it's inspiring, and at the same time, it could be overwhelming. Is there anything we can do or your community could do to see that we can speak to maybe politicians about this? Because I could see like this could lead to a policy change for some people. Because you're saying that if a sibling wants to take care of their own sibling and help raise them, there's a lot of questions asked and there's a lot of skepticism. And it looks like there's even some suspicions from other social workers as well. How can we make it so that you people who are in the same position like you can get some dollars, some resources to help you raise the siblings?
That is what I plan to spend my career doing once I graduate. I have lots of different ideas, and yes, on a policy level, I would like to make lots of changes. I think really there's a stigma with automatically people don't think of a sibling being able to raise another sibling, and I would agree in lots of different times it's not going to work out successfully for the child, but in many times people don't stop and think. You're asking about grandparents or an aunt. Well, if those people were available, perhaps this older sibling wouldn't be doing it already. So there are a lot of dynamics that are not really considered, and I think it's going to take a lot of society looking at things differently, and then maybe on a policy change, once we can start to build some kind of movement, maybe policymakers and other influencers would be able to maybe build on that.
Yeah, because we all know, like, some people have siblings from another parent. And if your parents had children when they were younger and then they continued to reproduce in their 50s, right? The man is 50, marries a younger woman. There's going to be siblings. So when people say, well, can the aunt take them or can another person take them, why not a sibling? And this really raises a question, and it makes you think about this topic, doesn't it?
What would be the biggest thing that would help siblings taking on siblings?
I think everybody's situation is so different. And the first thing that comes to my mind, again, be like breaking the stigma, I think, is really having people to not look at it in that manner where siblings are not able to do so, when lots of times in the circumstances they were already doing so before it became a legal matter.
Yeah. So do you think it's just a lack of information on this topic? Because I Googled it before we did the show, and there isn't as much information about this topic, siblings raising siblings versus, like, say, grandparents raising grandchildren.
Which I'm doing.
Yeah, like what you are doing.
Right,
yeah, we'll have to talk about that one day. So Heather, why do you think there's a lack of information on this topic?
I think a lot of times these families fly under the radar. Many times the help that they do get, let's say from social work, being food stamps and so on and so forth, they continue to get just help coming in under a parent when the parent may not actually being around, and they're afraid of being separated, so they don't step up further. So I think that's one part of it. And just in general.
Right, and you know, here's the thing, Kim. We have a lot of people in our nation that when you turn on the TV, everyone is talking about COVID-19 and the vaccine. They're talking about homelessness. They're talking about drought, financial literacy, how to get a job, how to take an opportunity and go to school or academic or trade, whatever it is. But this is a topic that actually is quite interesting to talk about, because
you never hear about it.
Yeah, how many siblings end up on the streets? Mm-hmm. How many siblings end up doing drugs?
Right.
How many siblings end up in a situation where there was something that went wrong with the family, with maybe a person not following rules, maybe parents had a, like she said, maybe there was a stigma against something going on, and the children left, run away from home, right?
Right.
And then a sibling steps in and say, hey, I want to help. But that person also need the resources to help. Because in the end,
the legalities of it.
Right, because in the end, you're going to prevent this person from probably ending up overdosing or ending up in prison or ending up without a job.
Right.
Or, you know, it's a domino effect. It's a societal thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Heather, have you heard, while you're doing your research, from any other families about how this affected them negatively when they didn't have the resources or a community that believed in them to help take care of these siblings?
On a negative level, aside from getting the assistance that we've spoke about, that, I mean, most people were very restricted to that. And as I mentioned also, they were keeping things through their parents' name, and they didn't have access to these things themselves. Other times, teachers or local officers or cops or even judges sometimes have known personally about the situation. People kind of turn a blind eye because they don't want to break up the family. But also they don't really do anything to help, because there's, on a policy level, the help just isn't there. There's nothing that says this is available to you. So that's my whole intents and purposes. Like you mentioned, there's not a lot out there on Google. My information is very outdated. If I can find anything, there was something based on a 2010 census. So that's very old. And that is my entire purpose of all of this, to try to bring it all together and find people, find out what their strengths are, find out what their vulnerabilities are, and maybe begin to put this together where I can and move this to the next level.
Right. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Heather Davis. She has a Facebook page called Siblings Raising Siblings. And right now she's connected with over 57 people in a private group, and they have 386 followers on the main page. And they're trying to connect families worldwide to learn about the strengths and weaknesses on a personal level and on a community level, and how to make changes and have maybe policy changes to help siblings who would like to raise a sibling. So Heather is also a grad student in the School of Social Work in the University of Maryland, and she's focusing her studies, her mission is to bring recognition and representation to, and resources as well. Three R's. Hey, I like that.
Yeah.
Three R's. Recognition, representation, resources to adult siblings who takes on a parental role in raising their sisters and brothers.
And one more R, rewarding. It
rewarding.
Has to be very rewarding.
I think when you say siblings, it doesn't have the same effect as raising your sisters and brothers. Because
yes.
We all hear about life, right? Everybody wants to say the pro-life. Well, you know what? It starts with all of us. It's about
right.
The environment. It's about financial literacy. It's about love. It's about forgiveness. It's about raising your family, making sure they go to bed with a full stomach, right?
Yes.
And that's what she's doing, and I think it's wonderful. So, Heather, tell us a little bit about the form really quick. We have 1 minute. You said there's a form on Google that you made so that the people could fill it out.
Yes, I will share that with you. And it is basically a Google form. It's kind of like a survey where I am asking information, whether it be past or current, when you had your siblings, and about the resources that you had available to you, both personally and professionally. Also about your current income, what your needs were at the time, where they met, who you had on your side, helping professionals, what barriers they came across. Again, just trying to gather information to be able to pull this all together and be able to maybe do something with it. Again, my ideas are very entry level at this point, and I'm just trying to build research. And wherever it may go, I am willing to follow this path. I'm just gathering data at this point. But yes, that form is there, and I will share it with you, and you can share it with your listeners.
Well, if ever you are in the Satellite Beach or in Florida, in Brevard County, Florida, we'd like you to send a little thank you to our good friend Dan Overstreet, who owns Atlantic Mortgage Services here in Satellite Beach. And if people are looking to purchase a home, refinance a home, mortgage a home, Dan has a variety of services that he offers. So, Heather Dennis, your segment caught the eye of our friend Dan Overstreet, and he decided that it was worthy of him to sponsor the segment. And Kim's going to say something for 30 seconds about Atlantic Mortgage.
Dan
Heather,
is.
You could hold on for a second.
He's my mortgage guy, always has been, always will be. And
he's awesome.
Always helpful, absolutely.
Okay, Paul?
Portions we'll be- of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. Delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9. That's cloud number 9 furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years.
The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great first segment, Kim.
It was.
And I'm so glad you're co-hosting.
Oh, glad to be here.
So, our first segment, we spoke with Heather Davis about siblings raising siblings. And the second segment, we're going to be speaking with Alina Martin. And she's talking about her book, Road to Me. And it's quite an eye-opening book. And I read it, I have to be honest, I read that book in 4 hours. I do speed read. And I didn't think I would get it ready on time for the show, but I sure did. But before we go to Alina Martin, she's going to be calling in. Tell me a little bit about your story, because you're raising your grandchildren, Kim.
Mine's
and you were raised
though.
By your brother, you just said.
Well, I lost my parents early, so my brother stepped right into, I have three brothers. They all stepped into dad's shoes. And even though I was an adult, they're still parenting me. We're a village. So my grandkids still see mom and dad every day. They just live with me, so they don't go home. So when somebody says, "Oh, is that your child?" Yes, it is, because they don't go home. My home is their home, and I have a 7-year-old and 16-year-old still in the house.
Yeah.
And so there's never a dull moment. Never a dull moment. But I'm very blessed because we are a village, and we do what's best for the kids always.
Yeah.
And it's best to be in grandma's house.
Yeah. And how do you juggle that?
You know, I juggle it because I have restaurants, so...
So they never have lack of food.
They never have lack of food, but it's always fun. Every night, everybody pools together who's doing what and who's got who, and that's what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, so in addition to raising your grandchildren, you were also assisted... by your brother once your parents died.
I still am.
So it goes right along with our segment that we just had with Heather Davis about siblings raising mm-hmm. siblings. And I know I did that too back in Trinidad. I had 18 siblings, you know, 17 plus myself. And I remember coming home from school and there would be a new baby. I'd be like, "Oh, he's so cute." But remember, we didn't have blankets. We didn't have shoes and little booties for the babies. We didn't even have baby bottles sometimes. My mother would take like a Pepsi bottle or a Coca-Cola bottle and put a little nipple on the top of it, poke a hole with a little needle. And my mother was adjusting those needles as the babies grow. She would adjust the hole, the flow, you know, for the babies to drink. And when I tell people that, they look at me like, okay, but here's the thing. You do what you have to do with what you got.
Yes.
My parents weren't perfect, but they did the best they could. And by all accords, if my American friends were raised with the Trinidadian parents, they probably wouldn't be speaking to each other right now because it was a difficult life.
Yes.
I mean, we went to school. I didn't really have socks and shoes until I was 12 years of age. And I went to school bare feet, just rub coconut oil on my feet and go to school. And people would make fun of us and ridicule us because we were poor. But we didn't know we were poor. We were just surviving, you know. And so when I think about siblings raising siblings, I always think about how we did it, because when my mom brought those babies home, we had to rock them to sleep. We had to help burp them. We had to change the diapers. And in those days, it was cloth diapers, in addition to taking care of ourselves. But we never were resentful, because we all knew that we love each other, and it's not perfect, but we tried.
My siblings and I are so close, even though we're miles apart all the time. There's not a day goes by I don't speak to all of them. And I was raised in a house with four generations of women.
Right.
So I think we just... Yeah, raised differently.
And in my family, too, not all the siblings get along either, because everybody's experience is different, you know, sometimes. But anyways, so our second segment is going to be right now with Alina Martin. And she wrote the book, Road to Me, and it's really, really good. I read it in 4 hours. I actually recommended it on Facebook to a book club group. And she's on the phone, and she's calling in from Palm Springs, California. I almost said Palm Strings. Strings.
Hi, Alina.
Hey, Alina. Thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, hey, we were just talking about, you know, before the show started, Kim is my co-host today, Kim Meredith. She is the owner of restaurants, and she caters food, and she's helping raise her grandchildren, and she's just a wonderful friend. And we've been friends a long time, and this morning, my regular co-host, both of them, called in for various reasons. And so, of course, Kim stepped up to the plate and she said, oh, I'm so excited to interview your guest. So when I wrote about your book to the group on Facebook, the book club group, I said your book is about finding yourself, is about self-worth, forgiveness, and being your own best friend after taking a road trip for a couple of years. Did I sum it up correctly?
Absolutely. Yes, you did a great job summing it up.
So tell our listening audience on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and my friend Kim here a little bit about yourself, and how did you embark upon this journey to find yourself?
Sure. My book, The Road to Me, was inspired by events in my life. I was struggling in my life. I wasn't happy, but I had no idea why. My two daughters were grown, and they were living on their own. I had raised them as a single mother, and I was working as a teacher, and I didn't like my job, which is terrible because I love teaching, but I was just in this state of confusion, a little bit of depression. I just didn't know what was wrong with me. So on top of all of that, I just was going on with my life, acting like everything was fine. And one day I just realized that I need to do something different, because my life is not fine. Something is wrong, even though I didn't know what it was at the time. So I decided to just sell all my belongings. I was renting an apartment at the time. I had already rented my house in Virginia, where I raised my daughters, and moved to California. And I wanted to be closer to my family at that time. So I just basically sold all my belongings and left my apartment and set off on a road trip around the United States with just my dog, Romeo.
Weren't you scared? I would be terrified if I had to go around, because I can't even change a tire of a car if I break down.
Okay, so I had to have a lot of faith that everything would work out okay, because no, I was not scared, which is surprising.
Alina, when was this? What time period?
I stopped in Mississippi at one point, and I met some ladies at the Welcome Center, and they said, "What? You're driving alone around the United States? What are you doing?"
Alina, when was this? What time period?
Okay, so I left at the end of 2016. And I traveled for about a year and 8 months, and ended at about, I'd say, like fall of 2018.
Wow, so recently. You know, we say that our show here, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, is fun, unscripted, educational, and quite informative. And boy, this is fun today, because I could just see her. Now, you folded up the townhouse, you said goodbye to everybody, you gave away some things, you sold some things, and I know when you had the things in the car, I read the book, and I'm like, I could just see that little car overloaded with all this stuff, and you're taking off. So,
yes.
And so, how does your book, The Road to Me, fit in with today's world? Because in today's world, we have COVID. People can't go anywhere like this. You know, you have to be extremely careful. How does the book fit in today's world?
Well, I was thinking, you know, people today are really craving honesty and authenticity and also transparency. And when I started to realize why I wasn't happy, and it all started to come out when I was writing my book, which I actually started writing while on the road, which makes it even more authentic, I realized that, I made a decision that I was just going to be very personal and brutally honest. And I just think in today's world, those are things that people are craving. And when you can do that, I think it's very empowering.
Can you go to Washington, D.C. with that message?
Yeah.
You should take the message on the road, because we're seeing so much dishonesty, and so many people lie to get ahead, and so many people twist the truth to get ahead. And I could understand a little bit of that. But now it's like lying 101 and bullying 101, it wins. And I wish there were more people like you who were honest, brutally honest about life.
Yes, yes. Well, I think, it takes one person at a time. And I think, we'll get there. People will see that there's a big difference between being honest and not.
And so, Alina, is that the mission or the purpose of your book?
Yeah, so the mission of my book is to help people. I believe that people will relate to my story. And even as I was traveling, I would meet people that asked me, how did you do this? How did you come to, sell all your belongings? And I explain all that in the book.
Yes.
And I think, people suffer. Many people suffer, but they really don't know why, which is what I was going through at the time. It's not always so obvious, because you think, you should just be grateful for what you have. But that doesn't always work.
Yeah. Well, so, when I read your book, I thought about my life growing up in Trinidad and Tobago in the Caribbean, and I thought about my friends, immigrants who come to the United States, and how much we suffer to prove ourselves, to make something of ourselves, so that the people back home would be proud of us, right? And then I read your book, and some of the things you wrote about your father and some of the resentment you had towards him and the way he treated you, I really felt sorry for you, for that child. But then I thought about my own life and people I know, that we actually, it's almost a cultural thing, because sadly, we do that to our own children in my culture as well, where the father is the head of household and he rules. And some of the things you wrote about what he was saying to you and how he always wanted to be the boss, quote unquote, it really made me stop and think about the self-worth of a child, and words do matter.
Absolutely. And my mother was always defending him and always on his side. And I go into depth in my book also on my relationship with my mother. And I never realized any of this until I was on the road and had hours and hours of time just to think, and or a song would come on the radio and it would trigger me and I'd start crying, and all of that just sort of flowed out while I was on the road.
Yeah, I know certain songs do trigger memories, and the words, you could remember where you were at that time when that song was playing. And it does bring back memories, because I remember the Bee Gees, and I'll remember Andy Gibb, and I'll remember back home in the 70s, and I was 12, and I was dark, and I was an Indian girl, and I felt like nobody liked me, and nobody wanted me around, and I was poor, and and it makes you feel sorry for that child of 12 that had to go through so much just to say, hey, I'm here, and I'm one of 18, and I had to fight for people to see that I actually was there. So no wonder I have a voice now. I'm speaking up for that kid too.
Absolutely.
Elena, what is your relationship now with your parents?
It's not that good. I explained towards the end of my book that I had to make this decision to just distance myself emotionally from them, because it was too much for me to take to be around them. I wasn't strong enough, and that's okay. We have a cordial relationship, and And really, that's okay. As long
so
as it's
you communicated.
Authentic.
You communicated
not,
with them while you were on
to
the
be
road.
Something I'm not.
Yeah, and you know, you got to that point. Your book is really eye-opening, not just for me, but I think whoever reads this book, they're going to walk away and say, wow, a lot of these things happened to me, and she was able to set boundaries. What I'm hearing from you and what I read is that you set your boundaries. It took you a while to set these boundaries, but you did it. And boy, I am so proud of you that you did that, because I actually used a line from your book to somebody this weekend, and I said, you have to forgive yourself. So tell us a little bit about the boundaries that you're setting, and how did that feel when you were able to stand up for yourself and say, you know what, two failed marriages, people putting me down, my self-worth was in the toilet, and I'm setting these boundaries. Tell us how you did that.
Okay, so I was scared to death to set boundaries. I realized that I was a person who never really said how I felt in situations around my family, around friends, around others. With my daughters, I was very bad at setting boundaries. I always just went along with others because I thought that was the right thing to do. And the first time I realized that that isn't really working for me, I have to be myself. And the first time I tried to, for example, talk to my mother honestly, she wasn't really listening, and she didn't really know what I was doing because it was new, but I was really doing it more for myself.
Yeah, so when somebody reads this book, what do you think will be the most significant thing to the reader?
Well, I think the readers will relate to many of the themes in my book. One of the themes in The Road to Me is how I was living in denial, and I cared so much about what other people thought about me, and I never knew that I had done that my whole life. And what I realized from my journey was the reason I was doing that was because I didn't believe in myself. So I hope that the readers will see that there is a path to authenticity and to feeling peaceful and feeling like you belong in the world. And at the end of my journey, I was able to reach a state of peace and belonging. And I can only wish that for everyone.
Alina, you have to forgive yourself. I love that line. But can you tell us about forgiveness?
Sure. So one of the chapters in my book goes into detail about how I came to face a lot of the emotions and feelings that I had from my years of raising my daughters and going through a divorce and being a single mother. And I didn't realize that I had so much guilt. And I didn't know that I had to forgive myself. They were all foreign concepts to me. So when I realized that I had to forgive myself, my way of doing it was to face the problems head on and just go right through everything that happened to me and get to a place on the other side where I could look back and say, okay, yes, all of that happened. So first I had to be like brutally honest, and then face it all, and then see that that there was a way at the end to forgive myself, because if I didn't, then I really couldn't be happy.
Right. Wonderful. So for our listeners who are tuning in, this is Sita Begee. I'm the host of this show, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. My co-host today is Kim Meredith. You have, what's your other name? You have three names.
Kim Meredith.
Okay, that's good enough. Okay. And we're talking with an author that I met through social media. Her name is Alina Martin. And I feel like I know you already. Because, you know, when you spoke in the book about getting pregnant and losing the baby, having a miscarriage, and then you spoke about your mother was not happy about the news of your pregnancy. And I wondered, were you able to go to your siblings to get that validation for someone to be joyful along with you that you were bringing a life into this earth and you were newly married and you were in school and you were trying so hard? Was there anybody for you at that time, Alina? Because I feel like I should have been there for you.
Oh, that's so nice of you. Actually, my sisters were very supportive. I have three sisters, so I'm one of four sisters in the family. And they were very supportive, and they never rejected me like my mother did. So that helped a lot.
Why do you think, I mean, have you spoken with your sisters about their experience growing up with the same parents? Because I know, like, in our life, in Hinduism, we learn to forgive a lot from an early age. They teach you about birth and death and what comes in between. And it took a while for me to forgive as well. But a lot of my siblings from my father's first marriage, they were not able to forgive certain things that happened during their lifetime with my father and mother. And I see both sides, and my heart breaks for them, and I understand now as an adult. Did you speak to your siblings to see if they had any kind of resentment towards your parents as well? Because you know how sometimes people say it's all in your head, right?
Yeah.
Yes, and unfortunately, my siblings may think that it's all in my head. And I think what I had to realize was everyone has their own personal, individual experience in life. And parents do treat their kids differently sometimes, and I had to accept that my experience was mine, and they may have had different experiences, and that's okay. But no, I don't think they could really
relate.
Well, yeah, my older sister could, because she and I went through a lot of the same things, but my younger sisters, not as much. I think they had a little bit of a different experience.
Yeah, I mean, it really makes you think about the relationship that goes on in a household between parents and kids, you know? And
yes.
And it, you made me think about my relationship with my four children as well, because I do think that sometimes it comes across as favoritism when one child is being treated, you know, different from another. And so thank you for writing your book and for allowing us to share in your story. But, you know, some of the things you talk about in your book, it just feels like you were in the right place at the right time. Like, you gave that person $13 for the toll, right?
Yes.
I mean, I was like, how did that happen? And I do believe it. I am a big believer of spirituality and that God looks out for us, you know? And I was like, that's amazing that the toll was $13 that you gave the person all your cash. Tell our listeners a little bit about that story.
Yes, I love that story. I think it's in chapter 10 of my book. So I was in Norfolk, Virginia, and I was in a hotel, and a truck came straight to me. And there was nobody else around, just me, and the man was crying. And he said that their truck had broken down, and they needed some cash to get over the bridge, which it's a very long bridge, and it has a toll, and they didn't have any money left to get back over the bridge to go home where they lived. And they asked me if I had any money. And I just happened to have just gone to the store, and I had a 20. I bought some snacks, and I knew that I had $13 in my pocket, and I just gave it all to them. And later I went back to my room and I checked up on the internet to see how much the toll was, because I didn't know if I had done enough to help them. And they were very distraught. And the toll was exactly $13.
That's amazing. That just gave me chills. Yeah. And so we have like 3 minutes left, and I really wanted to get to another story. And what about the one you opened the book with, the guy that told you about forgiveness? I think he was like,
yes,
a psychic or something. And that is such a strong point for all of us, that in order to move past and go forward, we have to be able to forgive people in our lives and just heal ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, I didn't know that I needed to forgive myself. So I needed someone to tell me that. He said, you have to forgive yourself. And he said, when you forgive yourself, you can forgive everyone. And that just was the most beautiful thing I had ever heard in my life.
Yeah. And, you know, what you make picking up and going place to place sound easy, because I'm reading the book and I'm like, okay, she has to put the deposit down for lights, water, telephone, and cable, but she's moving around and signing these leases on a year here and a year there and 6 months here, and then you break a lease and lose the deposit, and then you're using the money from the sale of the townhouse. And I'm right along in the car for that journey with you, and I'm thinking, but how is she getting all these security deposits in, you know? So you could just write a book probably about signing leases at this point. Were you ever scared to go from place to place and just like constantly moving like that and not worried? I mean, I don't know how you did it.
Sometimes I was, yes. sometimes I was worried, a little bit worried, or I would feel like I'm very tired from driving and I need to rest somewhere. But it, somehow I would always work it out and come to some resolution. So it was never really a big problem.
Wow. For a single woman, you know, most countries, a woman couldn't do that. So give us a website where someone can buy your book, The Road to Me. And I love your bookmark that you sent for me as well, your little postcard. It was just wonderful.
Thank
yeah.
you.
So give us a website and where can someone buy the book?
Sure. So my website is authoralinamartin.com. And if you Google Alina Martin author or author Alina Martin, it will all come up on Google search. My book is available on Amazon. You could go directly to the publisher, which is BalboaPress.com. You could go to Barnes & Noble. It's also it's available in print and Kindle on Amazon. And on my website, there's a link to buy it also. And you can also find me on Facebook if you do a search for Alina Martin, The Road to Me. My Facebook page will come up.
And so now that you're back in Palm Springs, California, you're teaching again and you feel like your soul is cleansed, I understand?
Yes. I'm actually not teaching right now, but I do still have my teaching license, so I could go back if I find the right opportunity for me. But I'm just resting and I feel good. I'm promoting my book and I'm very, very happy.
Well, you know, I have a saying that sometimes you have to be your own best friend. And I think as you get older, you shed the baggage that weighed you down all your life. And it's amazing when you find that purpose of self-realization, how good you feel about yourself and the relationships that you could make with other people. And I think God sends good people your way when you could have that positive energy. So I really wish you well. And I hope when I come to California, I'll give you a ring. I'm going to be coming to see my son there. But before we go off air, is there anything else you want to cover with the remaining 30 seconds about your book, The Road to Me?
No, I think we covered it all. I think it's a great read for people. I think people will relate to me. And I thank you for your time and for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, and you showed a lot of nerve in the end, and I was so proud of you. I was like, you go, girl, when you said to them, I will not be coming for the dinner.
Can't wait to read it, Alina.
I was like, yes, she didn't go. Yes. That's good. No, she took a stand, and I have done that in my life many a times, and I've said, I'm not going to do it, and it feels good. I think you put yourself first, you know? But anyways, to all our listeners who have tuned in today to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, Kim Meredith, Paul, thank you for running our board. Thank you, Alina Martin, for calling in. Thank you, Heather Dennis, for calling in and speaking about siblings raising siblings. And we'll be back right here next week with different guests.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.